You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
With us this hour, we deal with another important national issue, and that is, in a sense, the collusion of black people, black men, sometimes black women as well, in corporate culture, in covering up racism, sexism, and bullying. And I know it's awkward, because we often think that the face of power is the white man, but it's also the case that even though it is still, the numbers are still very low, that many black people are slowly getting onto boards of companies, positions of directorship, for example. And the question is, what do? Do you become so grateful that you are there, the only black at the dinner table or the corporate table, that you suddenly forget your own experiences of racism and sexism? And then you end up, through your silence or actively colluding with the system, and instead of becoming a champion in the fight against institutional racism and sexism, often black leaders in senior position are a problem. And this has been something that has been on my mind and my producer's mind ever since the story around Imperial Group CEO Mark Lamberti, who said he deeply regrets, I think he only regrets being busted, deeply regrets upsetting a senior black female staff member by calling her quote-unquote female employment equity. With few exceptions in the media, there's a part of this story that's been under the radar, and that is the bit we want to lift to the surface. Obviously, we are chuffed that Lamberti is at least no longer on the Eskom board. He must get his comeuppance. But there are multiple conversations to be had when it comes to sexism, racism, and in particular, misogynoir, which is when the racism and the sexism combines in the experiences of black women. And it is a name that has not been in the news as much as Mark Lamberti's. And it's a very important name because this is someone who is also in a position to have handled a complaint of racism on the part of the victim. And that is Mr. Thulani Chabashe. And the question's got to be asked. Why is it that it seems like black people in senior position are not necessarily your most natural ally if you've had an experience of racism? In the same way in which, as we now know from the awkward conversation with the deputy CEO of Grant Thornton, that having a woman as the deputy CEO does not necessarily mean you're going to experience less sexual harassment at your workplace. But what is it? And I'm conflicted. And I said to my producer, Megan, I often wonder whether it's right to expect that people who are part of oppressed groups should be more likely to be a champion than someone who is not. Is that an expectation that is itself problematic? Should the fact that someone is a woman mean that they should be more au fait with gender issues? Should the fact that someone is a senior member of the management structure or the CEO of the company and they are black, does that mean that they should necessarily be more literate when it comes to questions of racism? And I want to throw that out there as well. So I'm inviting you to call throughout this hour. What are your experiences of institutional racism and sexism, and black women in particular? And then let's focus a little bit more precisely on the question of black leaders in positions of power. Do they routinely let us down, or do we expect too much of them? 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. I'm already BFFs with Zanele, who's back with us from Transcend Talent Management, the managing director, Zanele Luvuno. Zanele, thank you so much for coming back into the studio.
Thank you very much for having me.
And in fact, I'm lying, but it's a small little lie. You and I off air spoke in part about this conversation and black people in senior positions the first time you came on the show.
We absolutely did. I mean, being a headhunter, working very specifically in that non-executive director space, working in that C-suite space, working with top-tier black talent, it's been so disheartening to me that one of the biggest challenges that candidates have when they come to us and are cited for reasons for wanting to leave a particular organization, over and above, you know, racism or sexism, if it's one of the reasons they want to leave a job, is the lack of support that they get from other black people that are sitting in those C-suite positions. And it's an obvious question. The first thing you ask is there anyone in the organization that can support you? Have, you know, before you try to move out of one organization into the other, because potentially you could, it's, It's a culture which exists in South Africa, in corporate South Africa. I mean, let's call a thing a thing. It's a problem that we have. And you will cite, for instance, very high profile names within those organizations, names that are known. And it's been very, very disheartening to hear that those are the people that actually do very little to support other black people.
Do you think that we expect too much of black people in senior positions? For example, I mean, a lot of people have said, how? There's a guy with this name, Thulani Qabashe. Surely when Ms. Chauvin was talking about being a victim of sexism and racism and misogynoir, you would expect someone by the name of Thulani to be a natural ally. Do you think that expectation is misplaced?
I don't think the expectation is misplaced at all. We're living in very, very critical times. I think we all have an ethical obligation to protect our workplace from racism, sexism, and the like. And I don't think it's just something that needs to be left to people in the C-suite. It's for each and every single one of us. If your colleague comes and has a problem, just because it doesn't affect you, it does not absolve you of your responsibility.
But what I mean is that responsibility particularly high if you're a woman, if you're a black woman in a senior position, or Eusebius is now the first black CEO of Prime Media? Does his blackness mean that he ought to have greater levels of empathy for institutional racism?
I think...
because I think, to be honest, we do have that expectation, many of us, right? So some people who've been a little bit disappointed by Thulani in what appears to be covering up through silence, at least. I don't even know the names of the rest of the people on the board, DC. I don't know who else is in Imperial, for that matter. So clearly the name Thulani has lifted to the surface on account of him being black.
So I think... these individuals, it's not just a function of they get there and they forget where they come from. I think they also face certain challenges.
Sure.
So, and I also think perhaps your experience changes over time. So what happens when you are the only black? I think as black people, sometimes we suffer from that only black syndrome where I'm the only black on the board. I'm the only black that's a shareholder. I'm the only black woman that's on the board. Oh, I'm the only woman that's on a board, for instance.
Sure.
And that can impact us in different ways. The one way it can impact us is for somebody to become very conscious of that and become very protective of that. So it's not necessarily a function of a forgotten where I come from, but it's a function of protecting what it is that I have. And then I think on the other hand, I don't know, do these people have as much clout? How much clout do you necessarily have in a board of 10 white males, to give an example, as one black person on that board? How much of a voice do you have? I mean, for you to be able to push an agenda, there needs to be some
apple cart, yeah.
There needs to be some kind of critical mass. There needs to be some kind of push
That's
behind you to steer that agenda. And it's just not there. So how do we really expect these people to carry the burden to the extent that we expect them to without the necessary support?
That's a very good question.
Boards aren't transformed.
100%. And that's a very valid question. I mean, what do our expectations are of black people who are a minority in senior positions? It's very hard through fiat to be the one person. You don't have a magic wand the day you become the first person at the corporate table with which you can suddenly change the corporate culture, for example. But I want to know what your experiences are and what are the thoughts surfacing for you, because this is one of those conversations that keep come in and out of discourse in this country. And that is, and it's an awkward one, because we all want to be appreciative and supportive of women and black leaders who are on these key positions, but sometimes they let us down. Let's take a break there, and then we'll come back to Sanela, and then we'll take some calls.
Cape Talk. Eusebius Makaiser.
So, Sanela, you make a very important point that we must have compassion with people that are expected to behave like magicians. If I am the first black head prefect of St. John's, I mean, you can't expect me to change institutional culture just in jail like that. It will take lots of work, and we need a critical mass. But can we also have that awkward conversation that as black people we sometimes don't want to have? Some of us enjoy our proximity to whiteness. So it's not that we only want to be an individual at work. I don't want to be a woman. I'm not coming to work as a black person. The truth of the matter is that some of us get rewarded for our silence.
Look, I think that is a fair point. I'm trying to tread so very carefully. Look, it's an
We don't have to mention names, but
It's a very unfortunate reality that there is a disappointing number of black people that are sitting at a C-suite level that are doing less than I think what is a bare minimum. And so we are not expecting them to be magicians. We are not expecting them. You cannot change the culture of a 6,000 strong organization as one individual. But I think that you do have a certain level of responsibility to bring to the fore the issues. You have a certain level of responsibility to provide, the necessary support structure, for airing those particular issues, because you have the ear of the people that make the decisions. Yes. So you are in a position of not just technical leadership according to your competence. 100%. So are you a CFO? Are you a CEO? But leadership, in the broader sense. And what one of those things is diversity and inclusion, and representing all people of the organization. Can we say you're a great leader if you, so you're a fantastic CFO, the results were great, but you did absolutely nothing for.
That's right.
For your gender, you did absolutely nothing for your race, you did absolutely nothing for anybody other than yourself.
Especially when you, and it's not true of every black person or woman leader, but particularly for those whose ticket onto the board has been, I am here as the person who will own transformation.
Because absolutely.
Let's also be clear.
Absolutely.
We've seen it, and I've worked with many boards on diversity work. It is often the women and the black people on those leadership positions who are there because they are the ones most passionate about creating inclusive organizational cultures, just spaces in our organizations. I mean, if you're just there as a career accountant who's the head of ops, fine. Yeah. I'll let you off the hook.
Yeah.
Okay, you're a business science graduate.
I don't think we let them off the hook.
Well, we shouldn't. But what I'm saying is that you certainly cannot be let off the hook if your spiel was transformation.
Transformation. I think most certainly, but back to the other point, it is not enough for me, and I find it completely unacceptable that a woman or a woman of color or anybody that is representative of a minority is given a seat at the table and does not use that in some way to further diversity and inclusion for other people in the organization.
Put your headphones on for me, Zanella, and let's hear what the listeners have to say. Mandla, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. McKayser. How are you?
Extremely well. Never been better.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. What an interesting topic, I have to say. Look, my comment is I don't think much is or a lot is expected from black leaders as, speaking as obviously as a black South African. I think it has to do with, the culture of the environment, basically. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example of myself. I used to work for an organization. I'm not going to mention the name of the organization, obviously, but I used to work for an organization whereby black people were actually abused in all spheres of, life as far as employment equity is concerned. Like, for instance, black people were paid less, as compared to, white people. Like, for a black leader to earn a very decent salary, you have to go extra mile. You have to hold many degrees for you to get, a very decent salary. Yet you can actually find, a white person occupying that particular position without any experience or without any whatsoever. Without any qualification, but, any more than, black people. So as a black, I remember what happened is that they had to change our chairman. So, the chairman used to be a white guy, and then they had to change our chairman to become a black guy. And I tell you, Mr. Makaza, we had so much hope, and the reason for that is because of how toxic the environment was. You know, we knew that, you know, I mean, for us to get decent salaries, we have to go extra mile. So it has to do with, you know, the environment. Sometimes the environment gets so much toxic to such an extent that when they bring a black leader, then we have hope to say that, okay, there's going to be a change.
But very quickly, Mandla, do you think that that expectation, that hope that we have, if that black person is brought in or promoted, do you think the expectation is unfair on the black leader?
Well, I don't think it's unfair.
Okay.
Like, to be honest, I don't think it's unfair. It has to be expected. I mean, as far as our history is concerned, it has to be expected because, you know, in some of the organizations, the environment is toxic, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm in the mining sector, and it's quite difficult out there. I don't want to lie to
sure.
you. So, you know, for black people, you know.
Okay, let's leave it there, Mandla. Sibu Siso, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, Sibu Siso. What do you want to say on this one?
Yeah, look, first of all, I would like to say that I wish you had an opportunity just to get this lady, the victim, and also this guy, Mandla, I think his name, on studio, you know. So far, we haven't heard anything from him. He has never said anything about this, what happened after the lady reported this to him. You know, the second point that I would like to indicate is I would like to commend this lady, you know, for taking on the board of Imperial. And then the third issue, just I feel he deserves to be called a sellout, you know, the chairperson. I feel he really sold out on us as black people because we have a lot of expectation for such people when they get into this board. Unfortunately, sometimes these boards, what they do, they just get somebody that they know is going to agree to anything and everything. So hence this quietness that you get most of the time. And the last point is that Imperial, I think from here onwards, they need to come on board, start a social program that will indicate that they are serious about fighting gender stereotype in society and within the company.
Okay. Thank you, Sibu Siso. And that last question we're going to pick up in the second half with Zanele once we move from our disappointment to asking more proactively what are the kinds of things that need to be done to change the status quo beyond our agreement that institutional cultures are very hard to change and norms. Sybil, good morning.
Hi.
Welcome to the show, Sybil. Go ahead.
Okay. So, look, I think the first thing a non-white, you know, should do is to stop. The first thing is stop saying I'm black when I'm sitting in a boardroom. You know, I think a black non-white who gets to a boardroom level has already been qualified enough with his experience in life and education to be there. And one of the drawbacks of that, which I'll give you as a personal experience, I moved up in 1993, 1 year before apartheid. The first job I could get as a person up here in Pretoria, I was the only non-white working in the company. I personally victimized myself because the rest of the guys were getting better clients because they were white, their families were working there. Or I made a decision, let me show these guys how good I can be. And by the time I was 18 years old, I already had 50 people working for me. Because what I learned in business culture is there is no business in the world that doesn't want to make money, irrespective of your color, your race, your religion, your, you know, whatever. So it's either you're going to personally victimize yourself because I'm black, I'm not white, but I'm sitting on this board, or you could use what you have, you know, all the strengths that you have to make the difference in the business, and there's no business that's going to stop you from making decisions if you are putting money in the bank.
Zanella, do you agree with him?
I would like to respond there. I think the first thing is you talk about victimizing yourself by identifying yourself as black. Black is what I am. A female is what I am. It is an important part of my identity. I don't leave it at the door. When I wake up in the morning, I have to live in the skin. And yes, you're right, it shouldn't impact how I do my job and my strengths and my capability to perform in terms of what I do, but to somehow erase that as a precondition to be considered successful in what I do, it just doesn't add up for me. You talk about just getting in there, and doing the best job and, you know, putting your strengths forward and transforming the business. Part of that is also racial and gender discrimination. Doing a fantastic job isn't just, did you make money? I mean, there has to be a, at what cost question attached to that. So if you're saying, I'm coming in, I'm doing my job, I did fantastically for my organization, and I don't care what has happened to others. I don't care whether there's gender discrimination within the workplace. I don't care whether others have got, equal opportunity. Then I have a fundamental problem with that logic.
The other problem with Sybil's logic is that he's actually wrong in saying that companies love to make money. That's not true. You will find that a CFO who otherwise loves to make money might say to themselves, you know what, I love to make money, but I don't like the way Zanella feels me, so I'm not going to give business to Transcend Talent Management, even if I know that she can find me the best possible staff members for my company to make me more money. So the idea that businesses are perfectly rational in trying to maximize value is not true. They sometimes make mistakes because they are filled with human beings who play identity politics but accuse us of being the ones playing identity politics. I don't know about you in your line of work, but I've now stopped paying attention to the literature that keeps showing a correlation between diversity and improvement in the bottom line. Because what's interesting to me, Zanella, is the gap. We now know, whether it's the latest McKinsey Quarterly, whether it's the next Harvard Business School study, we know that a diverse leadership is conducive to maximizing shareholder value. And still we don't have diversity. So where Sybil gets the idea from that companies are rational, I don't know.
And it's only the world over where diversity and inclusion has been legislated that it's happening.
100%.
Eusebius McKaiser on your number one news and talk station.
Before noon. Let's go back to the lines. Kim, good morning. Okay, we've lost Kim there. Ronaldo, good morning.
Good morning, Morgan. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's Eusebius.
Eusebius. Yes, I would just like to give a comment. I might get a lot of bruising from the community out there, but my comment is coming from a different perspective.
Okay.
And that is that as people should maybe try to take into consideration from what viewpoint the director is coming from and that what actual abilities he's got to intervene in a situation like this, and not just to put the argument based on color, because to basically say that he should do X, Y, and Z because he's coming from a black background and she's coming from a black background, and that's the only criteria that can be used. My argument would be that can be possibly construed as reverse racism.
Why would you say that?
Well, because if he's going to be asked to intervene because he's black, shouldn't there be another qualifying criteria? What if he doesn't have the ability to intervene?
Well, you got to separate two things, Ronaldo. The ability to intervene is one question. Then there's this descriptive question, is it reverse racism if you intervene specifically to deal with institutional racism? I think you would have heard throughout listening to Zanele that there's an acknowledgement that sometimes we don't have the tools, because if you're a statistical minority, it doesn't mean that you've got all the power. The company doesn't belong to you. And sometimes, let's also be just more humble about this. It's draining to be black every single day, right? So on the first question, I think you are right. On the second question, I personally have to disagree with you. I mean, from our constitution, if we want to put it in constitutional terms, recognize that in order to deal with the legacies of the past, you're going to have explicitly deal with institutional, interpersonal, and other forms of racism and other isms in society. And to say that that is reverse racism, and we can have the longer conversation another day, but the short answer to your question is that I think that that only someone with a low level of understanding of the literacy around the need for redress will characterize it as reverse sexism or reverse racism when you are deliberately trying to intervene to deal with past injustice.
No, I hear what you're saying, but my response was more directed into the direct core for his intervention, and what's the reason going around from what I hear on the calls going around for calling on that specific director to intervene. That's what my response is based on. But I expected a bit of a bruising.
No, you don't have to expect a bruising, but you've got to deal with it. I mean, firstly, let's stop being scared of people disagreeing with one another. But you still need to be able to then reconsider your viewpoint. Why is it reverse racism? I mean, just let that question marinate. If a director, black or white, is asked to deal specifically with a legacy of institutional racism, why is there a call for them to behave in a racist manner?
Yes. Well, look, I do not know. I only joined the conversation a little bit later, but I do not know if he was specifically called to deal with the issue at hand.
Okay.
What I do know is what I've heard, and what I've heard is a bunch of people also calling on him because he's a black person to intervene, understanding from what to come from an understanding point of view from the history that black people had gone through and everything that they had suffered through based on his color. That's what I understood the conversation to be, and asking him as a black man to step up and to be an active participant in the fight against
discrimination
in various forms.
Why would one make apologies for that? When we interviewed Narisha Singh as a victim of sexual harassment at Grant Thornton, I don't think it was weird for her to imagine that a woman deputy CEO of Grant Thornton Johannesburg will believe her more easily than, say, for example, a manhood. Does it mean that men are let off the hook in terms of leadership expectation? No. But at a sociological level, I don't think it's odd to expect that someone else who probably walked a mile in my own shoes directly should get me. Is that weird, Sanela?
Absolutely. It's he's not picking him, you know, out of a lineup randomly just because it's not an aesthetic thing that the color of his skin happens to be black. He has an understanding of the skin that she lives in. He will therefore, it can be able to translate her experience and understand where she is coming from in telling her story.
100%. Harold, good morning, and thanks for holding on.
Morning, CBS. Morning to your guests as well. Thank you guys for bringing up such an important topic for us black professionals in the corporate world. Sometimes we feel like because these things are so pervasive for us, nobody else is feeling our pain. So thanks a lot for bringing this up. I just want to bring up two points. One is to give you a little bit of background on my personal experience. So I work for a very prestigious company here in South Africa where the top management, so I'm talking about like at board level, at the very top, is very representative. And I mean, we've got a BE score of one. But however, as you know, the agents of institutional culture aren't usually the people that are at the very top. I mean, you know that the generals in general don't stay with the soldiers in the barracks. So the agents of the institutional culture are more the lower levels or the lower structures of management, where in my particular instance, that's not transformed. And the dynamic that's created by that is that whilst on the outside it seems like everything is hunky-dory, institutionally and inside, things are very much still very white and very male. So whilst I understand that these black directors or these female directors have got a massive obligation, I feel like the obligation is to deal with the institutional structure by transforming some of the lower stratas of management so that the impact of their being there at the top can actually be felt. That was the first point that I wanted to make. The second one was talking about Imperial and talking about Mark Lamberti. Okay, so yes, like you guys, I'm very happy that he is now removed himself from his directorship at Eskom. But why is it still acceptable that this guy is the CEO of a corporate company in South Africa? I mean, he has illustrated to us and to the entire country that he has got a particular attitude about females and females of color. And the females and people of color. So yes, it's good that he left Eskom, but why is it still acceptable that he's the CEO of Imperial? I understand it's a private company, but it's not acceptable with him from my point of view that a person that leadership in South Africa can exhibit those kind of attitudes and get away with it and keep his plush salary and all of the
Zanella?
Isn't it indicative, though, of the type of society that we live in? So, yes, he's resigned from the Eskom board, but how did he get onto the Eskom board to begin with? So when we do board work and we are doing an executive search for a board position, we look at there's a whole bunch of complexities. So current composition, the individuals, how will they collaborate, et cetera, and once you've got the right mix, right, you then go and you reference all the individuals. Surely a matter that stems from 2005 should have come up when the individual is being referenced and then being and then being presented on a shortlist. I mean, I'm not sure how state entities select their boards. I'd actually be very curious to know, because I often have this question when I look at the composition of some of the boards. But
especially now with the collapse of the section all should be in.
Well, yes, I've always wanted to know who is doing this board selection? Who is looking at all the different individuals, looking at the caliber of the individuals, looking at how they're going to collaborate, looking at how they're going to add value as a collective. But back to that particular issue, referencing was done, and obviously the case was in the public domain. You go to court to issue, you know, it's a case from 2005, if I remember correctly. So this information was obviously presented to the powers that be that made the selection on the Eskom board. Did they choose to ignore it?
I think in addition to that, there's a more simple reason why Mr. Lamberti will not stop being a corporate giant, and that is because something that Harold is not logically implying but needs to remind himself of, and we need to remind ourselves of, the fight, and this is what someone missed on the open line this morning, patriarchy and the way in which men operate, the brotherhood that exists between us as men, the camaraderie that we have, we look out for each other. And so, yeah, take him off the Eskom board, that's okay. I'm going to give him a call this afternoon and get him a job elsewhere. In other words, Mark Lamberti is not an outlier. He is Eusebius McKaiser. He is Harold from Sebokeng. He is Mava Kuselo. He is one of the boys.
The FIFA boys.
Exactly.
Before the case has even gone to trial.
And if there's one danger with the way in which we are having this discussion, which wasn't my intention, but it often happens. It happens in conversations about rape culture, racism, misogyny, is when there's one prominent case, Vicky Momberg surfaces, and then we treat her as an outlier because it can help us to imagine ourselves to be decent. The reason Mark will be okay is because society is filled with many Mark Lambertis.
Eusebius McKaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Let's go to Bromfontein. Akani, thanks for holding on.
Hi, Eusebius. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm well. So I'd like to make a comment. Okay, as a black person, obviously, I want black people who occupy specific spaces to champion the rights of minorities. But I also have understood that not all of us understand this. And if you have a caller like Michelle, who is female, who is saying to you, talking about patriarchy is anti-feminist,
yes,
and you still have black people that say, why are we still talking about race?
Yes.
So the idea that the person in power understands how important it is for them to champion minority rights is also a little flawed sometimes. So it always leaves us with us believing in our fellow black person. And then when they assimilate, because we must also acknowledge that the positive assimilation is a real thing. And we then blame them for assimilating because of a lack of understanding, if that makes sense.
110% it does. It raises two questions, which is exactly where I wanted to go with Zanella in the last 10 minutes. And I'll get your take on it first, Akani, and then we'll come back here to my guests in the studio. The first is, If people have low levels of literacy on questions of justice, inclusiveness, healthy organizational culture, should we lower our expectations to meet where they are at?
Wow, that's a tough one. I guess not. So as a black person, I'm still willing to explain to a black person why I can't be racist as much. Like, I'm not willing to explain to a white person, but I'm willing to do that with a black person. And if I have access to this person in power, this should be like a continuous conversation, because until we're on the same page, I'm not sure if I can genuinely blame them for not championing my rights.
Yeah. 100%. The second question I'm going to put to Zanele, in fact, but thank you. Lovely intervention. Thank you, Akani. I mean, the second question that is raised here is obviously, if we accept that not everyone shares progressive organizational politics, or that some people do, but maybe lack the language, or that some people do, but they lack the tools and the technologies from an organizational reform point of view, organizational cultural change point of view, to be able to do something. So you have a sense, you know what? Oh, I can feel that this place, Imperial, is a toxic place. I don't know what to do. Maybe we can try and, in the time that's left, have a more action-oriented conversation, because I think you and I, most of the listeners, agree that having leaders who are ill-equipped to deal with the psychological and other kinds of trauma that comes with institutional racism and sexism is not good for society, and it's also, by the way, bad for business. What should they do about it?
I think that diversity and inclusion has to be at the core of company strategy. It has to be driven from the top, and everybody needs to be engaged. There are a lot of organizations that have got some, they're phenomenal programs out there. And it's not just racism. It's not just gender. It's LGBT communities. It's understanding your neighbor. It's understanding your person. It's understanding the three people that share your cubicle with you. And so long as organizations see it as a nice to have and have an expectation that there is this narrative about inclusiveness and everybody is literate about it, and don't take it seriously and spend the necessary money that needs to be spent on diversity and inclusion, we're going to keep having these particular problems. I also think that when it comes to hiring decisions within organizations, companies need to stop being lazy. So there is this myth out there that black people who have particular skills don't exist. So the majority of jobs keep being filled by particular demographics, be it white males or whatever it may be. And
absolutely,
it's failing to create the necessary diversity and the necessary critical mass of diversity that is necessary to push these
agendas. Do you know the one that's my bugbear currently that is very now, the other myth? Oh, talented black staff are always a flight risk because, like, every company wants them.
Well, that's first and foremost because most of the time when they go and they headhunt a black person into their business, they're not creating real opportunities for them. So you call me in, but there's no value proposition. You know that you need a black woman on your board, but you're not sure what she's going to do yet.
Yes.
What in heaven's name is that?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So those are the problems. Do you blame me for leaving after I've been there for 3 or 4 months, realizing that my job has got absolutely no teeth, realizing that I'm tanking my particular career? And some of the time I'm finding some of these black women are complaining that they're doing the work of people that are supposed to have more knowledge than them, are in more superior positions than them. So yes, they're leaving. Start to create proper value propositions for talented black people that you want to bring into your organizations.
What happens and what does one say to those black leaders, women leaders, black women leaders that are listening, that sometimes roll their eyes and they're thinking and maybe saying to someone else next to them in the car while they're driving and listening to 702 in Cape Talk, oh, Zanele and Eusebius, I really wish they would, you know, be better than this and rise above this race stuff.
It is the ethical responsibility of every single one of those black people that are sitting in C-suite positions to use their position of power to further diversity agendas within organizations. If you are not literate about it and you don't understand it, well, you just listen to 702, so now you do and you have no excuse. In the same way that we fight with our white friends and our white colleagues and we have an expectation of them to understand the race agenda, what it is to be a black person and to live in my black skin, if it's something that you absolutely don't understand, go and educate yourself about it. You are not off the hook. We're watching you. We see you, and worse of all, we know who you are. So you may think that it's career limiting for other people to continuously raise these issues, but there will be a ceiling for you too, because the tide is changing. Yeah. People are no longer going to be accepting of having their dignity trampled on because of their sexual orientation, because of their gender, because of their race. And everybody has got an ethical responsibility to do something about it.
They're also seemingly small, but in horrible management speak, impactful stuff that black leaders and women leaders can take on more. And I'm not saying you can't expect them to boil the ocean, because obviously there's a limit to time, and also you've got your own KPIs. But I think of two practical things where we can do better as black people in senior positions. And by the way, when I talk about senior, I myself, I don't just mean necessarily someone who is, let's say, for example, a station manager in my industry. Eusebius is a senior staff member, right? So I'm talking about duties that fall on me too. The one is mentoring. We seem to be very awkward at reaching out. And I might spot Marva and say, okay, this guy has potential, but for some reason, I don't take him under my mantle. So that's the one thing we can do better. And then the other is that we are bad as black professionals at doing certain kinds of things. If you're in a leadership position and you spot that, even though it's not your duty to help that black person or that woman do better on some in the way in which they speak to their skill set, you do have the power, even if you don't have the duty, to help them out. Simple example, salary negotiations. We are horrifically bad at it. You know, I can give an arrogant summary of where I fit into the media space, but you might find that my head is hanging and my shoulders are slumped when a CEO says to me, okay, how much do you think you deserve? And yet there's this disconnect between understanding my value discursively and my ability to negotiate the salary. And then you have a gender pay gap. It's a cultural thing as well. All of those kinds of things. And there's an opportunity for a black leader who's in a position to say, come on, dude. Really? You want a 20 cent increase? I sugarman. You're better than that. And they don't do that. It doesn't cost them anything.
So many people that have gotten to the top, Eusebius, when you ask them how they got there, they talk about how they had a sponsor. Somebody who picked them out.
100%.
And said, I'm going to advocate for you. I'm going to say you X, Y, Z are going to be fast tracked to CFO or to marketing head or whatever it is. And it's really learning how to be a sponsor to somebody else, setting aside the time the same way that somebody did for you. I've actually hardly ever heard a story of somebody who got to the top that did not have a sponsor 100%. Within an organization.
Zanella, you've been brilliant. Thank you for sponsoring this conversation.
Thank you for having me.